And so this idea, articulated by Malcolm most eloquently in the 1960s, was put into concrete form with the establishment in Grenada from 1979 to 1983 of a defense capacity comprising a small standing army and a people's militia, citizens, civilians trained in the basics of self-defense, trained in the doctrine of a people's war, should that be necessary. And the response of the Grenadian masses to this idea was phenomenal. Thousands and thousands of volunteers came forward to be trained for the people's militia. Another pillar upon which Malcolm's ideas rested was his insistence on the right to self-determination of the oppressed and the exploited. The right to self-definition as a parallel to the right to self-determination. How did this express itself in Grenada? By our insistence on our sovereign right as an independent country to make our own decisions in the area of both domestic and foreign policy, and our right to be free of all outside pressures and interventions from more powerful countries and governments. This was a right that we took seriously and that we were prepared to give our lives for in its defense. Malcolm also stressed the importance of self-reliance in the process of nation building. This was fundamental to the construction of a strong and independent nation. To break out of the cycle of perpetual dependency that Grenada and all other third world countries found themselves in and unfortunately continue to find themselves in today, to break out of that cycle demands the implementation of a policy of self-reliance, particularly in the area of our economic development. That idea as well was given high priority in the planning of the Grenadian revolutionary leadership. Malcolm also insisted that progress for African Americans cannot be made until and unless independent organization of the African community was undertaken. Self-organization, not organization by this or that wing of the oppressor and exploiter class, but organization that was indigenous to and generic to the African American community. This idea again found resonance in the Grenadian revolutionary process, with the establishment of mass organizations of youth, of women, of workers, of farmers, with the establishment of village councils, parish councils, community groups, entities that would stimulate the involvement and the participation of the masses in the process of nation building. But ultimately, the task of nation building was not for the revolutionary leadership alone, but was a task to be shared jointly between the leadership and an organized and mobilized people. So, sisters and brothers, we truly in Grenada, in the short 4.5 years of the existence of the Grenada Revolution, attempted to concretize some of the fundamental principles that Malcolm X taught us in the 1960s. Finally, let me say that as we are poised at the threshold of a new decade, the last decade of this century, a decade that holds out for all of us, certainly in the short term, some very bleak prospects. All the news and all the indicators coming out of this country, certainly coming out of the Third World, in the years to come. In fact, the decade of the 1980s, which for a certain layer of society in America was one hell of a party, which the decade of the 90s, the bill for that party will be paid, unfortunately, by your generation, because most of you in this room are young. But for the Third World, the decade of the 80s was what is now being known as the lost decade. Without exception, every single country in Latin America, the Caribbean, Africa, and with some exceptions in Asia, but the majority of countries in Asia as well, saw their living standards fall, decline. Every country in Latin America and the Caribbean, for example, registered a negative growth in their economies in the decade of the 1980s. And what did this translate into? Translated into spreading poverty, translated into higher unemployment, translated into lost opportunities, translated into greater dependency by the Third World on the imperialist centers. Unfortunately, all the indicators point to a continuation of this process in the 1990s, and indeed to a worsening of it. The prospects in the developed capitalist countries like the United States and Western Europe are no brighter. Every day we pick up the newspaper and read about the coming recession in the US, or we are already in a recession. For communities of color in this country, we are already in a depression. A depression that is going to worsen in the decade that lies ahead. And in Eastern Europe, which has just experienced a democratic revolution, the prospects for the restoration of capitalism in the worker states of Eastern Europe in the short term is going to mean hardship and misery for workers, farmers, throughout that part of the world. So the decade that we are about to enter, sisters and brothers, in my opinion, is going to be a decade of intensified struggle. National struggle and class struggle. From region to region, from continent to continent, from country to country, from community to community. Our responsibility, our challenge is to prepare ourselves for the coming battles. And they're going to come. And they're going to be gigantic. And I want to suggest finally that one of the important ways that we can prepare ourselves, prepare our minds, prepare our hearts for the coming battles is to continue our study through reading, through discussion, through dialogue of the legacy of Malcolm X. I think that the application of Malcolm's fundamental ideas will become perhaps more relevant in this decade of the 1990s than they were 25 years ago when he was gunned down. And as we study Malcolm X, we should also arm ourselves with the formidable arsenal of ideas of other great revolutionary figures of this century and of the martyrs like Malcolm who belong to the pantheon of our heroes, to the ideas of Bishop, the ideas of Sankara, the ideas of Samora Machel of Mozambique and other third world revolutionaries. It is my view that the next phase of the Third World Revolution will unfold in this decade. Look around the Third World today. There are no apparent revolutionary movements on the ascendancy. In fact, the demise, the disintegration of the Third World Revolution is being predicted by the defenders and the apologists of imperialism in this country and around the world. I happen to believe the opposite. I happen to believe that the conditions, the objective conditions that I spoke about earlier, will continue to worsen. And I happen to believe that as those conditions worsen, the necessity for a revolutionary leadership to address those conditions will become more and more apparent in the years ahead. It is a fact that none of us can dispute that at this moment, 1990, there is a serious crisis of leadership in this country, in the communities of the oppressed, communities of color. There is a crisis of leadership. That point was made last evening at the opening plenary. I happen to believe, and that is true of leadership in the Third World as well. And that is true of the entire continent of Africa, with one or two exceptions. It is true of the entire continent of Latin America, with the shining exception of revolutionary Cuba. And it is true of most of Asia. The need for the renewal of revolutionary leadership in the Third World is on the agenda. Malcolm X's ideas, Malcolm X's legacy, will help in this process of renewal. More needed today in the Third World is organized self-defense at all levels against the rampaging triumphalist imperialist monster, whether it is from the Middle East to Southern Africa to Latin America. More needed than ever before is the defense on the part of millions of oppressed peoples around the world of their right to self-determination. More needed today than ever before is the application of Malcolm's idea of the importance of self-reliance in nation building and in economic development. More needed today than ever before is the application of Malcolm's idea of self-organization fundamental to all of this, more needed than ever before, is the question of the empowerment of the masses. I'd like to end with a quote from Malcolm, two quotes from Malcolm. One on his understanding of the centrality of power. And by power, Malcolm meant, as we in Grenada meant, the power of the people. Not the power of the ruling class, but the organized, expressed power of the majority, the power of the masses. Through the control of the state, which is only possible after a revolutionary victory, and through the instrumentalities or the organs of a popular democracy of the people. At a labor forum in 1965, in January 1965, Malcolm made this observation on the question of power. He said, "Power never takes a back step, only in the face of more power. Power doesn't back up in the face of a smile, or in the face of a threat, or in the face of some king of nonviolent loving action. It's not the nature of power to back up in the face of anything but some more power." And this is what the people have realized in Southeast Asia, in the Congo, in Cuba, in other parts of the world. Power recognizes only power. And all of them who realize this have made gains. And a final quote from Malcolm. In the last year of his life, reflecting a deepening understanding on his part of the nature of capitalism. And I end with this quote because I feel that the new phase of the Third World Revolution that will unfold in the decade of the 1990s will have more of an anti-capitalist, an anti-imperialist character than the phase that unfolded throughout the Third World in the 1960s and 1970s. The fundamental thrust of that period of the Third World Revolution was anti-colonial. The fundamental thrust in the 1990s will be anti-capitalist and anti-imperialist. Asked, what is your opinion of the worldwide struggle now going on between capitalism and socialism? That was 25 years ago. One could hardly talk about a worldwide struggle between capitalism and socialism today. One can speak about a worldwide struggle between capitalism and the oppressed and exploited peoples of the world. That's a different question. He said, it is impossible for capitalism to survive, primarily because the system of capitalism needs more blood to suck. Capitalism used to be like an eagle, but now it's more like a vulture. It used to be strong enough to go and suck anybody's blood, whether they were strong or not. But now it has become more cowardly, like the vulture, and it can only suck the blood of the helpless. As the nations of the world free themselves, then capitalism has less victims, less to suck, and it becomes weaker and weaker. It's only a matter of time, in my opinion, before it will collapse completely. These are prophetic words. The realities of today may appear to be quite the opposite to this observation that Malcolm made 25 years ago. On the surface, it appears that everywhere in the world you look, capitalism is triumphant. Socialism has been destroyed, Eastern Europe and so on. But look beneath the surface of that triumphalism, and you would find a fundamental weakness. you will find that the inherent contradictions in the system that we call capitalism, that we all live under and struggle under, are sharpening with every passing day, and that the crisis of capitalism will in the next few years prove to be more devastating for the toilers and the oppressed peoples of the world, as well as for working people in this country of all races and all ethnic groups, than the so-called crisis of socialism. For that I am absolutely convinced, and I would be happy to polemicize with anyone in the audience on that or on any other question. Thank you very much for your time and patience.